Hi everyone and welcome to the Curve Mindset Podcast from McGinley Coaching. I'm your founder and host Lauren McGinley. Today we're joined by Steph Fairburn. How are you, Steph?
Yeah, very well, thank you. How are you?
Oh, I'm good, thank you. Can you just tell the listeners about a background of yourself and the kind of role you work in the kind of women's game?
Yeah, well, there's numerous roles I'm working in the game. Bit of background, I'll try not to make it too long. So I'm originally from Newcastle, grew up playing football, having all sorts of brilliant opportunities to play football, which I think was rare at the time I was growing up. I'm now based in London. So I coach. I coach at a club called Girls United, where I coach the under-13s league team. I do some work with the FA as a community champion, so that's getting more women into coaching. That's, you know, working with clubs to identify who those women might be and then supporting those women as they step over the sidelines is the phrase that we use. And then also I work media roles in football. So I'm editor-in-chief of a few coaching magazines, so Soccer Coach Weekly, Elite Soccer and Women's Soccer Coaching. And I have a podcast called Who's Got the Balls with my awesome co-host Ali Speechley, where we talk about being women in coaching and everything that involves.
Oh, by the way, probably I've seen Ali's work and it's really incredible. You know, of course, it doesn't help if she's a Spurs fan, so that really doesn't help in any way. Or the fascination with Harry Kane, you know, like that's a different thing, but that's a different podcast. But I'm interested in the community champion kind of work, because you see a lot of in the coaching courses, it's predominantly male dominated, and then there's a few female on the course. But what do you think are the barriers that kind of cause these things to happen? Because I've got a couple of things I would love to discuss on it, but I just want to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I think it's not always been the safest space for women, I think, to go through coaching badges. And I mean that in a number of ways. I think some prejudices maybe that people might have against women's knowledge of the game or why they might want to be involved in the game. And then I don't know that the FA's always done the best job of how they allocate spaces, how they allow people to get in. And they've improved that a lot now, I will absolutely say that, but I think there's been some issues around that. I think a lot of the women that we work with in the community champion side, they are absolutely more than equipped to become coaches, but they just need a nudge to say that that's the case, because society and, you know, the structure of football hasn't always told them that that's the case, when a lot of their skills align and a lot of their knowledge aligns. So I think part of it is just making it known that this is a space for women. And then, like I say, continuing to make it a safe space when women are involved and making sure they're being looked after and thought about and taken care of. And it's not just a, you know, you see it a lot, right? Ali's an example. She'll say she was a woman in a room of 22 men for her course as well. And that's not, I'm doing my UEFA seat at the minute and we're half, there's 10 women, 10 men, which I think is really incredible. So it's also, you know, it's about, I think in the past it's been like, let's get one woman in and job done. Not the case at all. We need women. We need more than one woman. We need support around those women.
Yeah, because you look at a lot now, the UEFA licences, and they push women to kind of, like, as part of the cohorts, usually sometimes it's all women, you know, and then all men. And but do you think that's one of the kind of better ideas, that it's having that kind of, safety in numbers, but there's no an element of I can learn from this person, I can learn from that, without getting prejudged or learned, because in the day we're all football coaches, you know, and it's all, we're trying to just develop children, young adults, first team, but it's all about, sometimes it is a fear of, I don't know if I've said the right thing. And this is also a male too, you know, if they say something, you know, that's not going to get, they could be ridiculed, you know, in a way. But again, going back on the subject, it's good that there's more courses now that are female only, so therefore it kind of has that way of a different way of thinking, you know, like they can actually learn to be part of a group.
Yeah, so I actually did my level 1, that was female only, so I've got experience of both. I think it's great to have the option.
Yeah.
I think for me, female only level one was a great way for me to start and kind of find my feet and feel quite comfortable. I've spoken to some women that have said, you know, no, I don't like it. I want to be in a mixed environment straight away, which is really fair. So I think having the option to kind of meet people where they're at and how they're feeling about it is really good, particularly at the start of the journey when they're kind of just, like, you know, like I said, finding their feet. What I would say is in those mixed environments, there's an onus on the people that are delivering, I think, to set the tone about, you know, as we should be doing anywhere, how respectful something is, you know, how we behave, all of that. You know, you're talking about saying the wrong thing. I'm a big believer in that. We're all going to say the wrong thing at some point, but as well, as long as we're willing to learn and open to feedback and to, you know, hearing about that and thinking about how we can improve, then fine. But I think it's on people that deliver to kind of set the environment, like I say, and also for the men in the room to understand what they can do to be allies to the women that are there as well.
Yeah, because you look at in the kind of look at Union Berlin, and is it Marie Louise Atta? She's the new interim assistant coach. But the biggest thing I said, I read it on The Athletic, and the person in charge of the club said, doesn't matter if it's a man or a woman, they're a qualified coach, so therefore we've gave them the job. Do you think that's a huge statement, but also do you think it's going to be a trend soon of these things are happening, of not looking at just the gender, it's actually the person who's qualified? Because a lot of pundits, you know, Farrah Williams, really, really good, you know, then you've got Alex Scott, but they're very, very good at in the women's game, but they also cover the men's game too, because they have a great knowledge. Do you think that's going to improve in the next kind of 5 years, that sustainability, but also the increments of knowledge? Because I love watching the BBC, but I also watch Sky Sports, and it's great having, you know, it's great watching the men's game, but also it's great watching the women's game, because you get a different point of view from the analysis, but also a different way of thinking from a coaching point of view. Do you think this is going to happen in the UK soon, or do you think it's still a bit of a kind of taboo subject?
No, I think we're making progress. I think it absolutely will happen. Like you say, like the pundits you referenced there, Farrah Williams, Alex Scott, they're brilliant. And I think, you know, everyone talks about Emma Hayes and how brilliant she is when she does co-commentary and stuff. And I think we're absolutely moving that way. I think there are still some people that are... You see a lot of stuff, right, about why are they commentating on the men's game or whatever. Fact is, men have been talking about women's games and everything else about women for years. So I think it's, you know, it's football. We should all be able to talk about it in whatever way we want to. But yeah, I think we're definitely moving towards that. I think, again, it's just about making sure we've got the structures and support in place to make those things feasible, and to also make sure that when we get women into these roles, that's not a job done. It's like, okay, they're there. How do we keep them there? How do we support them? How do we bring more women in? And yeah, make sure we continue it.
Yeah, because sustainability is probably the factor, because you look at, I was listening to a podcast and they talked about the reference of the men's game, the women's game, and it's you look at like grounds, you know, like how the I love watching Arsenal, how they play, but I also just love watching just football in general. But they created this really good atmosphere, you know, 60,000 people at a women's game, but they've got it 5-6 times. And then you've got Manchester United, you know, obviously playing Man City, when it's the derby, but then they go to a ground that's only got maybe 5,000 fans. But sometimes that's the benefit of having that, because see, if you've only got 10,000 fans at a ground and there's a 60,000 seater, it doesn't look good, but also it just doesn't seem like the atmosphere's there. But you look at a lot of the grounds that have got lower attendances per se, but they can fill it. Do you think that's it's a good thing, having, I don't want to say a dual ground, you know, like having the men's team and the women's team playing in the same ground, but also having the women's team playing on a different ground, which is close by, which could potentially bring more fans in?
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, a lot of people in the game that know a lot more stuff about this than me say that the most dangerous thing you could do is jump too quickly, right? You don't want to go, cool, we're going full time in this big stadium and then we're getting, I don't know, 10% of seats filled, because that's not a good experience for anyone, is it? Not for the players, not for the fans. So I think that dual thing that we're seeing now, you know, Arsenal, whether they're using Boreham Wood or and then using the Emirates a few times a season, it's a big event. They're starting to bring the people in. I think progressing in that way is exactly the right way to do it. And I also think it's like the women's football community for so many years, it's been those small venues. It's been, you know, a lot of the same people. There's been such a connection with the players and stuff. And I think to just kind of rip from that really quickly would be quite jarring. So I think the opportunity to have that while we're also progressing to the level it needs to be, because ultimately it does need to be in these big stadiums, and I think it does need to move towards as much prominence as the men's game. But I think doing it slowly is what keeps it sustainable and what keeps it at the heart, you know, women's football at the heart. Because I think the danger as well is that, like, people think, oh, maybe women's football should just replicate the men's game. And in a lot of ways, yeah, but in a lot of ways it's its own beast as well. And I really just think there are a lot of lessons we can learn from the men's game, which is so incredibly massive. Things that, you know, you might want to take, but things that you might want to say, nah, that's, we can do it much better now that we're building the women's game.
Yeah, because I was listening to Athletic's podcast, the kind of European version, and they talked about it a couple weeks ago, about when it was Liverpool versus Everton, and they had Everton fans in the cop with Liverpool, and I was like, they were just kind of saying that's the worst thing that would happen, because it just makes a mockery of the, like, I'm not a Rangers or Celtic fan, but if I was at a Celtic ground and there's Rangers fans in the Celtic bit, it would just cause absolute chaos. Again, women's football is slightly different because it's a little bit more friendly, but still there's a rivalry there, you know, a huge rivalry. Do you think that sometimes, you talked about like the idea of like the media, you know, and also the, you know, a lot of social media, there's a lot of good things are happening, but as you say, it's going to take time to get the game going again, because obviously it was banned for 50 years and it's getting back and back and back. But you look at like the WSL, you know, that Barclays deal, which is great, you know, helps with finance. But I was listening to another thing last week, and they talked about, like, if a male player's on X amount, why is a women's player not X amount? I said, well, what if the male player is weekly wage, is basically sometimes the yearly wage for the women's team. Do you think it's good to have sometimes not as much pressure, you know, from the outside to succeed? Because if you keep on putting pressure on, then the game just starts to, it won't be, it may be more privatised, which potentially could deprive the whole game in the kind of the long term.
Yeah, do you mean, I suppose, are you getting that kind of pressure on individual players or pressure on the game as a whole?
And the game as a whole, because I think the way you've got the game, and it's like, you're not going to, look at Wrexham, you know, for example, the men's team, but they obviously worked in the women's team, and they're not going to spend the money that they have, but they're not going to spend £200,000 when they can't. They'd rather spend the money on getting sustainability, you know, working the men's game and the women's game, but the certain men's teams will not focus on the women's team because they're not interested, or they might not be. But if you go too fast for any sport, then it's a great event, but there's going to be repercussions very, very much so later on. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are. And you said they're kind of going slowly, but sometimes it slowly wins the race in a way, which is going to help increase attendances, to increase revenue, increase the idea behind the women's game.
Yeah, no, I absolutely do think slowly wins the race, and I think that gives the game the respect it deserves. If we do that, I think in terms of pressure, I think there's different types of pressure, right? I think the women's game has always got, you know, I said earlier about society and the structure of football, it's always got pressure to prove something, and it's almost like it needs to be a level higher than anything in the men's game has to be to prove its worth, I suppose. So I think there's, you know, just when we're talking about pressure, I think there's different types of pressure there. But Yeah, I think going slowly is absolutely the right thing. I do think, though, there are a lot of men's teams that could do more to back their women's teams, and that doesn't mean get them in the stadium every week and get them on, you know, equal pay. Like, no one's asking for that, really. What they're asking, though, is for fair wage, fair salaries, fair treatment, women that can play, you know, full-time, rather than having to do numerous jobs, because that's where the pressure comes on the individual, right? If they're having to, there's been a bit of a mismatch, I think, in the growth and the support that some of these players have been getting and the finance that they've been getting. So I think if we can just make sure that we're tackling that, then I think that's a really important step as well.
Yeah, because you look at grassroots, you know, like in a lot of you see a lot of male coaches and female coaches, you know, and it's great having such a variety of different coaches working with grassroots boys and girls. But see, in your role in kind of 13s, which is actually a really good age to work with, because you get to kind of do a lot more tactical, technical, but also more fun sometimes. And you also have to learn about the different parts of the kind of biology and physiology. Is it good having that kind of working with younger girls from a female point of view, so therefore you could potentially be a role model to them? But is it good having male and female sometimes, or is it good having male or female? I've worked in the women's game before, and it's great working with 13s, but also 23s. But just again, you look at pressure. You know, 23s is the results a little bit. The 13s is not results, but it's pressure from parents, pressure from the friends and all that. How do you think how it's worked in the last, maybe, well, the time you've been coaching from?
I think, yeah, so the question about being a female that's, you know, coaching a female team, I think it's so important. I think, I mentioned at the start, when I was growing up, I got opportunities that were quite rare, I think, at the time. I had two female coaches, and this is like 15, 20 years ago, which is crazy. But immediately that gave me the message of, oh, there are women in the game. Like, this is possible. So I think, you know, I think just being there, them seeing a female doing what I'm doing is really important. I think, obviously, you know, there are things that they will be experiencing that I will have experienced, and that automatically gives me a certain advantage when I'm working on certain things. The same if there's a man coaching a boys team, there are things they'll know about their experience that I could never know, just because I've never had the opportunity to, you know, to live it. I think, so the way we coach, I have a male assistant, and I like that. I like the balance. I've worked with a female there as well. I think ultimately, like you were saying before, it's about people, right? So we're in an ideal world, I think there would be a female, at least one female on every coaching staff. But I think we're a long way from that. So I think it's just about whether you are two women, whether you're two men, whether you're a man and a woman coaching, whether you're, you know, a non-binary person. Like, it's just about how you're showing up for your team, how you're understanding what your strengths and weaknesses are, how you're showing up as a coach. I think that's the best we can all do.
Yeah, because talking about coaching, you know, you're an editor in chief, which is brilliant. I love that. It's such a cool title. But because you see a lot of the programs, you know, like, I'm just editor. You know, like, no, I'm the boss. But you've obviously going to deal with different coaches that are going to maybe want to be part of the magazine, but also different ideas and different methods. What's the kind of idea behind the magazines? Is it coaching? Is it different ideas? Is it methods? Is it more just to help grow the women's game? And also from that, do you get a lot of requests to maybe do some interviews that are kind of related to maybe working with younger ones, but also kind of first team level? Because I was speaking to someone earlier, and they said every coach wants to be a first team coach or a head coach, when they could be the best under 12s coach, under 14s coach, but it could be the men or the women's game. What's the kind of idea behind the magazines? Is it more coaching development, or is it very much a variety of everything?
Yeah, so that's an interesting point, actually, about every coach wants to be a head coach. I've been speaking to someone that says I'm an assistant. I know this is my role. I love it. And I think we really need to place more value on coaching at whatever level, particularly at grassroots, because that stuff is hard. That's really hard. And we say, you know, here's, you know, do it for free. And do all this stuff for free and work your way up to the top, and then you'll start getting paid. And I think that's why people drive for that, whereas we need to show that that's a valid option and we support it financially and in every other way. But and on the topic of the magazine, I suppose I'll talk specifically about women's soccer coaching. So the idea is that we, so it's for women coaches or male coaches working in the women's and girls game. And it's for coaches kind of grassroots level all the way up to professional, US college. And we've kind of got, we've got readers at every level, I think. And it's a bit of a mix of sessions. So we like to run sessions from women coaches, showing kind of what they do, what their approach is, and give, you know, give coaches. We're always looking for inspiration, right? We're always looking for session ideas or to understand how people set stuff up, or even if, you know, do they do whole pot hole or do they do warm up practice game, like all of those things. So there's a bit of that. And then we usually, you know, each month we'll speak to someone that's pretty prominent in the women's game or that's doing really brilliant things in the women's game. And just get their insight again from a perspective of, you know, what's your journey been? Let's see, you know, how can you inspire, you know, other people? And then there's also a lot of advice in there, a lot of tips. And then we do kind of like special issues. So we've done one on eating disorders in the women's game. We had Molly Bartrip, the Tottenham Hotspur centre back, that led on that. We've done periods, we've done women who have children and then try to come back into the game. So we try and do really kind of specific stuff that needs talking about a lot more, to be honest, to support coaches managing with that. And yeah, we do get quite a lot of requests. I think it's just good. Like, for example, I went to this FA Women's Grassroots Conference a couple of months ago. And I looked around and there was 200 of us, 200 female coaches in the room. And I was like, and I like turned to someone, I said, isn't this weird being like among so many women in a football context? Because I think we all know that there are other women out there, but sometimes it can feel like you're operating in isolation a bit, or, you know, you don't feel as connected. And I think what we try and do through the magazine is show that there are a lot of us kind of pushing in the same direction and show a bit of community and yeah, that there's support for us.
Yeah, because it's interesting because I love reading. I've got like 500 books beside me. You know, I'm obsessed. You know, like I think I'm getting banned from the library now because I take too many books out. But I love research and like on ACL injuries and the kind of the cycles. I read about it because I was listening to Emma Hayes, and you've got different people that are talking about it. Do you think people are sometimes embarrassed, or not embarrassed, but kind of think of like things that are maybe a little bit of a taboo subject, that sometimes they just don't want to read about it because they don't know what's going on? But the best thing is actually to have that knowledge. And the second part of the question is, have you have that knowledge and you learn that, see, if you work in the women's game and you have a knowledge of how the cycle works, how nutrition works, how the ACL injuries work, how you work in different parts of the game, you know, like set pieces and all that, do you think in the more women will like that in a way? And if you're at a kind of first team level, that therefore you've showed that care and, let's say, connection, because if you have a connection with the players, then they're more likely to go above and beyond for you as a coach if you're struggling with, maybe you've got some emotional stuff to deal with, or you're struggling as a team, like maybe losing some games. But sometimes it's just about having that faith of the coach knows what they're doing. But sometimes it's good to have that knowledge of, I can actually, can experience it, but I've read about it and I can talk to you about it more. And then you can actually have the support staff around you who might not know about it, but they can go to them to delegate that information. And then therefore you're part of a team, you know, a whole team.
Yeah, I think to your first question, I think there is there is still a lot of taboo about stuff. I mean, periods as the example, I think is the biggest one. I think, you know, it's just important that we recognise that if you are someone that doesn't have periods and you're just starting to work in an environment with girls or women, maybe you've not had cause to really think about that before, and that's fine. But now you do have cause to think about that. So, you know, if you're gonna, I think it's a matter of respect, really, if you're working with people that have periods to I was gonna say get over the taboo. That's probably not the best phrase, but do what you can to, like you say, educate yourself. And I think that's so important. Like, we, you know, everyone throws out that statistic about the percentage of research that goes into men's injuries or whatever. Like, a lot of our assumed knowledge when we're coaching is based on male bodies, male experience. And therefore, to make it, you know, the best experience we can for, you know, girls teams or women's teams, we need to be pushing that and educating ourselves. And like you say, you know, we'll know our limits. Like, I know I'll never know any of the, like, in-depth science behind ACL stuff or whatever, but if I was working at a certain level, then I would want to work with someone that does know that, to make sure that, the players are well looked after. So I think, yeah, it's really about, you know, educating themselves and just talking about it. I think, like, we kind of underestimate how powerful it can be just to talk about something and to have one conversation with someone that then prompts a thought in them, and then they might pass it on to their friend who's coaching, and just kind of you know, stuff works like that as well. So I think having the conversations, and I think, yeah, shout out to all the men that are kind of educating themselves on that stuff, and all the women as well, because, you know, we go through this stuff, but it's individual experiences, isn't it? Like, we still have to learn about what others are going through and how we can support.
Yeah. And it's obviously, if you're a male working in the female game, sometimes it can be kind of daunting, because you've got, like, different parts of the game that you, the technical and tactical part, you can work on together, but sometimes it's the physical part that they might struggle with, because it's not about maybe the physicality, it's just, do you think it's good having a support staff around you that has, I always remember the best quote was, if you think you're the smartest person in the room, then you should leave, because at the end of the day, you're not going to learn anything. But is it good having that support staff around you, so therefore you can feel connected to the staff, connected to the player, connected to upper management? Because when the one thing is, it's all, you know, fun and rosy when things are going well, but when things are not going well, you work on emotion, and emotion is a big part of the game, male and female, but it's more, you see it gets sometimes misplaced as, like, anger, when sometimes it's actually, you're upset about something. It's good having, maybe if you're a male head coach, but you've got maybe some female and non-binary people that are in the kind of support, and then having that kind of team that's going to maybe work together on the improving the skill set of the players.
Yeah, I think, I guess what you're talking about, right, is, like, diversity of experience, yeah,
and personalities.
Yeah, exactly. Diversity of personality, diversity of experience, different walks of life. Like, I really think the more different experiences you can get in a room, the better, because that's how you get diversity of thinking, right? And that's how you get, yeah, different ways to move things forward. Like, a lot of the, you know, the reason the women's game got stopped and the reason that the women's game is now having to build up again is because all of the decisions were made by one type of person, right? Whereas if you can get as many different, you know, viewpoints and people in the room, and then I think that's massively important, yeah.
Yeah. Just get one final question on mindset. You know, we talk about it. How would you describe your mindset, and what would you think is the kind of best way to kind of continue a kind of coaching journey for kind of young listeners or listeners that are you know, working in the female game?
Yeah, I think I sorry, oh, I needed two. I think I have a positive mindset, but I have to work quite hard on it. I do. So I have depression and anxiety as well, which you can play games with my mindset, I suppose. Let's put it like that. But I think my advice to kind of coaches that are listening is that you know, it's never as bad as you think it is, and it's never as good as you think it is. I think coaching is, it's so many highs and so many lows, and that's, and ultimately that's probably what we love about it, right? The opportunity to experience those things. But I think it's a lot of the times what I have to do in terms of mindset around coaching is stepping back, reframing stuff a little bit, thinking about what actually happened, taking some time away, refreshing, and not making knee-jerk reactions based on how a session went or how a game went. Like, coaching is a big journey, it's a process, it's a really vulnerable thing to do, actually, putting yourself out there in front of a group of people on a weekly basis, sometimes more than once a week. So I think, you know, one thing I've learned to do is give myself a lot of credit for what I'm doing, and the respect that I give to the players in terms of them learning and making mistakes, I try and give that to myself. As well. So yeah, my advice to coaches listening would be to embrace the good times, but also the difficult times, because that's all part of it.
So, thanks again, Steph, for chatting to me.
No, thank you so much for having me. It's been great.